go. Everyone, welcome to the Villa Together podcast with myself, Chris Ellis. Reaction to Aston Villa against West Bromwich Albion, and it finished West Bromwich Albion 0, Aston Villa 3. Once again, I'm joined by Joe Davidson and Ian Gillett, and making his debut all the way from Yorkshire, we've got Jack Cudworth. Jack, how are you doing?
I'm not bad, thanks. A lot better after that. How are you guys?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Joe, Ian, as always, you guys okay?
Yeah, excellent as always, and feeling all the better for that.
All good, Chris. I'm loving the 7:15 kickoffs on a Sunday evening. We don't need any other fixture on the fixture list at the moment. Just give us all 7:15 on a Sunday, we'll take it.
Haven't they all had Martin Atkinson as referee as well?
Oof, that'd be quite the start, wouldn't it? I'm not sure.
I'm sure he refed the Liverpool game and possibly the Arsenal game.
Yeah, I think I remember him doing the Liverpool game. I can't remember the Arsenal ref, to be fair.
I'm sure that there's two other 7:15 Sunday evening kickoffs where we've won. I mean, we love a 7:15 kickoff, don't we? And when Martin Atkinson's been the ref, so we know that it's kind of 7:15 on a Sunday. If Martin Atkinson's reffing us, then there's no chance for the opposition.
Put your money on the Villa.
Yeah, exactly. Right, we're obviously all, you know, well chuffed with that win. Good performance as well off the back of what was a relatively decent performance against Burnley. One was frustrating with the result. I want to come to you first, Joe. And we mentioned it at the end of the podcast only, what, two, three days ago. We both kind of said, you know what, I think that it's going to click. And we're going to get a 4-0 win. We both kind of went along those lines. We got a 3-0 win. What, you know, how close were we today in terms of it all coming into place?
To be honest, I didn't feel that we played exceptionally well today. We played all right. They were terrible, frankly. We looked like, as we were saying the other day, a good team. Now, we didn't have an exceptional game. We just comfortably beat them 3-0. As soon as they decided to step out of their box and remove their brick wall, it was relatively easy. They just wanted to park 10 men for the whole game. And frankly, anyone struggles against that. The same way they got a point against Man City doing exactly the same thing. If anything, I felt we made better use of the ball than City did. And something that was really pleasant to see, and Dean Smith mentioned afterwards, was the composure and the time we took on the ball. Last year, we were really bad for rushing play as soon as the team went down to 10 men, allowing them to counter on us far too easily. It's how Arsenal beats us. And I know it can be very frustrating for fans watching us pass it around the back when there's 10 men camped behind the ball. But at the end of the day, you've got to wear them out, you've got to run them down, and you've got to make them make mistakes. And that's exactly what we did. I felt we managed the game really well.
What about, we mentioned this the other day against Burnley, about Marvellous Nakamba. He seems like he's a relatively decent deputy for Luiz, does what he needs to do. But in terms of his kind of, his passing and what he does on the ball compared to Douglas Luiz, what difference did you think that Luiz coming in and having him back in that number six position in front of the back four today, what difference do you think that made in terms of us being able to break down West Brom today with Douglas Luiz in front of the back four, where we kind of seem to miss that a lot against Burnley on Thursday?
Again, it's his ability to act as the sort of metronome of our team. His ability to dictate the pace of play is fantastic. I'd argue he's probably top two or three DMs in the league for doing that. A really good example, that little back heel in on the edge of our box that sent us on a counter-attack. He spreads the ball incredibly well. He breaks up play really well. The only thing that I would argue he could get a little bit better at is sometimes getting caught wrong side, but considering he's still, what, 21, 22, he's going to mature into some defensive midfielder. I can see him out of our crop players at the moment being one of the best of the bunch. If he doesn't go on to play Champions League football, hopefully with us, then I'd be very surprised.
Yeah, totally agree. I think one key thing that I kind of took from the Burnley game was that the Mings would get the ball. He was the kind of the more of the ball playing centre half. He sees Nakamba in front of him. Normally, if Douglas Luiz is there, he plays it into Luiz, and then it just brings their midfield and their defence as well that bit deeper and that bit higher, allowing us to get in behind. With Nakamba being there, the ball went long and we didn't have that. We didn't open up Burnley enough. With Luiz being in there, it gives us that bit more of something, because every time he got the ball, the likes of Gallagher and, you know, whoever else was in the midfield, I can't really remember, Livermore for the 5 minutes he was on, were kind of right on him. But like you say, Luiz is top quality. He takes those players away, for a few seconds. Boom, he's bounced it back off. Balls forward, Grealish, El Ghazi, ball carriers, and we've got that space to run into. And I think that helped us a bit. Totally agree. I don't think we weren't top draw. I think, if you're kind of going to judge our performance, we're probably a 7 out of 10 in all fairness. Just going to go through some of the stats from the game. In terms of shots, we had 19 compared to West Brom's 1, which... I think that stat on its own, just that stat, just seems to kind of just reflect the way West Brom were fairly reluctant to kind of get forward at times. And I think that kind of carries on from their last game, which was against Man City, but also maybe that, Sam Allardyce comes in, he's not too sure about how his team is. He doesn't really want to kind of go forward too much and push it on. And it's really anti-football. They had one shot, one on target. 10 of our 19 were on target, 67% possession against 33, which is pretty good. They had 14 fouls to our 8. Early doors, there was an incident. Ian, what were your thoughts on the Livermore red card? Was it clear cut?
Yeah. I mean, as soon as you watched it in real time and you thought, well, he's put one in on Jack, but he's already run, like McGinn's already fouled Livermore. So you're thinking, oh, the ref's not going to pay too much attention to it. But then when they check it over on VAR and you see it again, it's that. And I think they've said it on BT Sport, haven't they, tonight, the pundits? It's the way he lunges and loses control of his challenge that is the big thing. And you just can't do it in football now. We were saying, weren't we, on the last pod after the Burnley game, that sort of football is becoming a non-contact sport. And as soon as you lose control of your a challenge and it looks aggressive, then you're going to get sent off and there's no excuse. And I think he's only got himself to blame tonight. It's put his team in a bit of a corner, but I think we were dominating before that anyway in terms of possession and the sort of the pace of the game and the flow. But yeah, it's a definite red card. I thought, to be honest, that House was going to see red as well if they'd have sent the ref over. Because as House is, obviously, you can see it's a lot lower on in the challenge, but it's still sort of stood showing, isn't it? And it's going through right through the Albion player's ankle. But luckily, they didn't, and it didn't affect us. But yeah, it's definite red card for Livermore.
I think the thing with that one, and I was worried at the time, I think the thing with the Courtney Hawes one is that I think Dean Garner slips. So as he slips, and Hawes' foot probably goes onto Dean Garner's leg more than it would have done if he was stood up, because his leg's in the upright position, Hawes comes in, it probably would have been more like that, kind of on the side. But as his leg falls, he's got the whole kind of area of his leg for his foot to come down on. I mean, Joe mentioned the red card probably did West Brom some favours, in all fairness, because it was almost like it's almost an invitation to say, right, okay, we need to play, bank of four, bank of three and one up top, two banks of four and one up top now, because we've lost a man. Whereas beforehand, I think they, for the five minutes before they went down to 10 men, I think they were trying to get at us a bit, maybe try and get an early goal. Allardyce likes that, get an early goal, sit back on that one. It was all day long, that was a red card, the Livermore one. I think we mentioned it a few weeks ago about El Ghazi hasn't really played much, and you kind of looked at him, when you looked at the bench and you looked at the subs and you're saying, oh God, look at the bench. El Ghazi, what's he going to do? And he had a bit of a indifferent season last season. He had some good parts and some bad parts. Mainly towards the end, it was pretty bad. Obviously, the last three games, he's completely turned everything around. Two goals tonight. He got a goal against Wolves. He played reasonably well against Burnley. So I'm going to come to you on this one, Jack. How do you think El Ghazi's played in the last two games? Didn't really, I mean, he got the goal against Wolves, didn't really do too much in that game, but the last two games, you know, are we seeing a bit more of a confident El Ghazi, possibly off the back of his Wolves goal?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you said, against Wolves, there probably weren't too much they did. Obviously, limited minutes, but yeah, managed to keep a bit of composure and get that for us to get 3 points, which obviously I think he needs that confidence boost at the minute. And then taking it into Burnley, he just lacked that sort of last bit of quality that I think pretty much everybody else on the team did. So I'm not going to hold him to sort of a higher standard than all the other 10 people on the team, but yeah, it's good to see him playing with confidence. I think kind of the same, not quite the same, but with Traore coming in, I think Trezeguet has had a bit of a kick up the backside to push on, and even though he's lacked a bit of quality finish at the end, I think he's made massive strides in his sort of overall game, and unfortunately some fans have taken it too far, which has obviously led to El Ghazi coming off of social media. But yeah, he's come back and he's proved every single one of those people wrong. But yeah, if we can see this from him sort of on a regular basis, I think we can rely on him a lot more this season, and it's obviously good to see.
Yeah, we said that the last couple of pods that we'd done, we said about El Ghazi after the Wolves game, you know, it's kind of just that bit of confidence from getting the penalty, as you said. It didn't really do a lot, but he got the penalty, good composure to put the penalty away. And it gives him that confidence at a reasonably decent game against Burnley. But I think now, even if he is to, you know, I don't think for 1 second he's gonna make that left wing position his own for the season. I think as we did see a bit in the second half today, that him being on the left, obviously with Jack in the middle, it's probably a bit more fluid than someone else being on the left with Jack in the middle, because they can interchange, which they did in the second half, and it worked quite well. Ghazi unlucky to have a hat trick, but I think throughout the season, things chopping change at a team, and different players will come in and stuff like that. I think what it gives us, which is the main thing, what I can see, is that it gives us a better option with El Ghazi being on the bench now. Because you look at it and you think, okay, El Ghazi, he's done all right the last, you know, couple of months, however many games, as opposed to looking at him thinking, well, he's literally done nothing. He's coming on for 5-10 minutes and he's not really having an impact on the game. So I think now it is just strengthening our squad, because you look at it and you think Trezeguet, as you say, I think he's done really well this season. Probably say his first choice right winger, or he may well have been. I think Traore had a fairly decent game, but you think Trezeguet is a big part of a good player this season. Traore is obviously playing relatively well. Grealish and El Ghazi's form, certainly after today, is looking good. So you look in the wing positions where you think at the start of the season, you looked in and thought, do you know, if we get an injury to Jack or Trezeguet, who appear to be the only decent wingers, then we'd struggle. But now you look and you think, oh, we've got options. Obviously, with Barkley coming in, we mentioned this against, that probably was the main kind of silver lining and the main shining light after the Burnley game, was the fact that we had no Cash, no Luiz, no Konsa, no Trezeguet, no Barkley, and we dominated a Burnley side who, obviously, they're not great this season, but they've been fairly consistent and fairly decent over the last what, I think it's their fifth season in the from the Championship into the Premier League now. And again, similar tonight, you look at it and you think, we've absolutely dominated West Brom. Yeah, okay, they are shit, and they're a Championship side. But these days, there's not that much of a massive, massive gap between top end of the Championship and the Premier League. And you've got to remember, we only stayed up by 1 point last season. And to look at it and think, okay, Ezri Konsa to come in, he's been one of our best players since you know, post-lockdown, arguably, back in the last season. Ross Barkley, technically, he's up there with Jack in terms of best players. So we've still got a bit more to go forward. Kind of looking at, we mentioned this Thursday, Joe. The XG, when we played Burnley, we had 1.81. Burnley's XG was 0.32, and that was off the back of 27 shots. I mean, you think about it in that, you think 27 shots and your XG is 1.81. It just kind of shows how our shots were more speculative than anything else. Tonight, we've had 19 shots. We've had an XG of 2.62. as opposed to West Brom's 0.04, which is the one shot they had, which was a Matt Phillips free kick. You know what?
Is that the lowest in the Premier League this season, Chris?
I don't know, to be honest, but he's pretty bad, isn't he, in all fairness? In terms of, he's got a bit, unless there's teams that haven't had any shots. Because, you know, 0.04, it's just, you know, it's a pretty speculative effort that Matt Phillips had from a free kick against a goalkeeper of Emi Martinez's quality. He probably is. We'll have to check it, and I'll tweet about it if I can find that, if it is. moving between, so going from the Burnley game to obviously tonight, Joe. You know what is that? You know, looking at the XG, 2.62 from 19 shots as opposed to what we had, 1.81 from 27 shots. You know, what is that kind of showing going from the Burnley game to the game today? Obviously, a big difference is the goals, but also, you know, the less shots, quite a significant difference in terms of our XG. What is that kind of showing in terms of our performance tonight?
I think the key thing is the patience we showed. As I mentioned earlier, I know there were many comments on Facebook and Twitter of people getting very upset because we were taking too long. But at the end of the day, it worked. We were managing to find much better pockets of space. We were making more clear-cut chances, and we were actually progressing the ball a lot better as well. Something that I was very impressed with, actually, because it isn't normally his game. Grealish passed the ball very quickly. Normally he holds on to it a lot, but today he was really shifting it about. There were still some very speculative attempts. El Ghazi, as always, you kind of expect it from him. It's the one element of his game that he really does need to cut out, those 30-yard punts that they never go in. They go in like one in 90 or something ridiculous from like 35 yards. And that was the only time when we were doing it. The rest of the time, we were really patient. We were waiting for the clear-cut chances. We were, to be fair, at times, scything through that defence. Watkins, the chance for Watkins in particular, was probably the most unlucky. There was another one ball over the top where El Ghazi didn't quite manage to cut it back to Watkins. It was sort of on a half volley, I think. Fantastic play, just slightly unlucky to miss it, the cross. At the end of the day, it happens. But yeah, I think that was a really telling factor, that we just didn't panic this time. I think the early goal really helped as well, being able to have that lead. It stopped us losing our heads to the same degree. And that was it was a fantastic finish as well for that, the outside of the boot. Yeah, just a little bit more quality and not losing our heads.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the kind of the pass success rates across the team, you look at the front four, pass success rate, 93% Traore, 96% Watkins, 89% Grealish, 85% El Ghazi, McGinn and Luiz both 90%. Defence a bit lower, Cash 78, Hawes 88, Ming 78, Target 80. And I think they are the guys playing more long balls than the guys in front of them. So that's going to be a bit lower. But I think that completely backs up what you said, Joe, in terms of the patience, the high passing accuracy of those players there. And I think one thing I think about Grealish was probably being more central. He's in a position where he's trying to get he's got more runners in front of him, as opposed to coming off the left. He's looking at probably a couple of players, sometimes one, whereas he's playing centrally. Ideally, he's got those three players in front of him that are right in front of him. He kind of can see the bigger picture probably a bit more, and he's passing it off a bit quicker. Another controversial VAR decision. What did you think of the offside decision, Ian? I mean, I think everyone, every Villa fan is going to feel the same. I think actually even on the BBC live commentary, they referred to it as a joke. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Exactly that. You couldn't sum it up. It, any better, could you? It is a joke. Like, I haven't managed to see the stills back yet because obviously rushed straight from the game to do the pod. But when you're watching it and you're thinking, right, so let's just check Matty Cash's position when he receives it for the cross.
Yeah.
And you think, yeah, he's onside. And then you look at Watkins when it leaves Matty Cash's foot and you think, yeah, he's definitely behind the defender. He's running onto it. He's had to stretch to get the finish. And then you're thinking, this can't be called back for offside, surely. And then you see the lines going up and you're thinking, no, still not. I'm looking at that still image and I'm still seeing, how can this be offside? Like, what part of his body can they get offside here from it? And then it pops up in the pink offside and you're thinking, no way. And you're thinking at that time, because it's sort of towards the back end of the 70 minutes, wasn't it, I think, at the time. And then you're thinking, well, is this going to be our day? Are Baggy's going to get a last-ditch equaliser from a long punt or a set piece? And you're thinking, crikey, if another VAR controversy rules us out of winning a game, what can we do? But yeah, it's an absolute joke. I'd love to see it back. I need to do a bit of research on it when I've got a bit of free time after the pod. But yeah, I need to see these stills again, because I'd love to see where they've drawn the lines from each player and the Albion defender as well to make Watkins be offside in that position. But yeah, I don't know what else you can say about it.
Yeah, I think it is, you know, I think the BBC summed it up perfectly, saying it was a joke. Me and Joe and Jack mentioned it just before we recorded. The thing is, obviously, you're looking at VAR on a whole. I can kind of accept it sometimes in terms of VAR isn't the issue. It's the referees looking at it, or whether you look at it as one package together, the referees with VAR. Obviously, Hawkeye is... should, you know, he's forensically accurate in terms of, you know, there's something in the ball. Once it goes over a line, there's a notification to the referee, to his watch. He knows whether it's gone over or not. I think it's failed once since it's been used, certainly in the Premier League. Possibly, I can't think of any other occasions it's failed where it's been used outside of the UK. But luckily for us, I suppose in some aspects that it did fail that time. But when it comes to offside, I know it's a tough one. There's so many. It's a grey area in terms of so many different things to take into consideration. They seem to nowadays be taking the arm into consideration when it's always been, it's only your own offside. It's part of your body that you can score with. You know, sometimes it's looking at hair. You know, are people going to be punished because they've got longer hair or funkier hair than others? You know, is everyone going to have to shave their hair off? And also size of feet and things like that. What I want is some kind of, you know, to make it more forensically accurate. And one thing as well is we were talking about how it's the frames per second of the, because they're not reviewing the actual, because obviously it's a replay, so they're reviewing footage. When you look at VAR, so this is just something that I've just looked at. So if you look at someone like Raheem Sterling and his pace, obviously he's an extremely quick player. You're looking at, you know, the most minute and finest of margins. You look at, you know, a 1 millimeter or less. I mean, it's really going to be tight to get around that. But, you know, in theory, that's the difference between offside and onside, 1 mil. But you look at someone, so a player who's running at a pace of 6 meters per second, it would require a 6,000 frames per second camera to capture every 1 millimeter of movement. The VAR cameras are up to 120 frames per second, which is actually four times higher than regular broadcast cameras. So when you're looking at a difference between 6,000 frames per second and 120 frames per second, there's quite a significant difference there. I think that's the issue where it comes in terms of the speed of the player and the speed of the play. So you're looking at between when the ball is played from whoever plays the ball forward or ball goes into the box, the player who attacks the ball and puts it in the back of the net, that difference there between the ball being played and the run and the movement, about that is too quick for these cameras to pick it up. So they've got to bring something in to make it more accurate, because like we've said, and Ian's just said, you look at it and it looks onside. I think some of them you look and think, oh, maybe it is just offside. The Watkins one the other week, and these, that is the difference between, you know, we should be a point better off from the West Ham game. That could have been tonight. That could have been a difference between 3 points and 1 point. It wasn't in the end, but you think that decision could have buoyed West Brom, and then they could have thought, you know what, we can get back into this. But it's just frustrating. It, you know, it seems like every week we're talking about stupid decisions, and this was one today, and they really need to overhaul the offside decisions to make it more accurate. Joe made a point in terms of rugby, that they'll look at it. They can't be so accurate. So it's almost like they're looking at it on you know, naked eye in terms of making the decisions in there, rather than trying to go off the technology that they're going off on VAR. And maybe that's something that we should look at. Kind of sometimes you look at it and you think, what's the point in having a linesman? They'll put the flag up, that they won't put it up. At the end of the day, they're going to go to VAR. You might as well just bugger them off and not bother paying their wages, because it's a waste of bloody time. Just before we move on to who we think our man of the matches were, one player who impressed me tonight, managed to get a goal, was Bertrand Traore. What did you think of his performance, Jack? Do you think he's kind of starting to kind of grow into things a bit more now?
Yeah, I think I mentioned in our chat sort of midweek that it kind of frustrates me in parts. He's got a bit of a tendency, and he still did it tonight, that he kind of gets the ball and his immediate sort of thought is to sort of pass it back to Cash, or yep, sort of play inside rather than sort of try and take the defender on. I mean, obviously, YouTube is never the gold standard to look at from highlights, but if you look at him, I mean, he has played Champions League football once upon a time. He has played at a decent level, and he can take players on. I mean, he showed that quite a few times tonight, where he drifted past some players pretty easy, and you just sort of want more from that. But yeah, in terms of how he's gone on so far, it's probably his best performance. And to be honest, I thought he was quite deserving of the goal. And what a goal to sort of take. Very silky finish.
Yeah, lovely finish. That is kind of up there in terms of, you know, if you're going to teach someone how to finish in terms of placing the ball in a corner, that is up there with something that you'd want to be showing somebody. It's you know, textbook pass into the corner. Really, really good finish. I think he bang on it, in terms of, we've looked at games over the last how many weeks since he's kind of started coming into the side. Far too often, ball comes into him, and then it's almost like his first thought is to pass it back. And that's happened far too often. I think Joe mentioned the Brighton game. Traore came on and 75% of his passes were going backwards. And in terms of an attacking player, you know, that's not what you want. And he got at players. He got himself an assist early, the early goal, got himself that goal. And he looked really dangerous. And who scored gave him man of the match. And he did pretty well. And, you know, there was a lot of times when he got at them. I suppose he is quite predictable because he's very, very left-footed. But yeah. I think with having Matty Cash, there is that worry that if players aren't, you know, player shows him on his left foot, if he shows that finishing and the crossing ability that he's shown, he put in a few good free kicks in the box, which he has done in the past. If he's got the ability to open up a defence in terms of maybe putting a ball over the top, putting a ball in, linked up nicely with Grealish and Watkins today, and Cash as well. If players are going to show him onto his left, obviously he's got the ability to score and set up goals. But if they don't, and they try and push him out wide, then we've always got that outlet for Matty Cash. And I think you don't want a player to be too predictable, but at least in hindsight, you look at it and you think, well, Matty Cash will get forward, you know, time and time again, and put the balls in. Just before we quickly move on to the kind of last bits, Joe, just want to quickly mention, I mean, we've always mentioned, you know, since start of the season, really, about Cash and his performances and why we brought him in and why he's kind of come in and why he is number one and Gilbert isn't and why Gilbert is third choice. What about that difference? We mentioned the difference going Nakamba to Louise. What about that difference today, going from Elmo to Matty Cash and having him back in the team?
To be honest, today, Matty Cash, defensively at least, didn't actually have that much to do. This was far more the attacking Matty Cash that I guess a lot of people expected when he joined us. His runs beyond Traore were fantastic. I thought his link-up play was exceptional. It was very reminiscent of the Target Grealish link up on that left hand side. Normally we are very left side dominant, but actually today we were, if anything, I'd argue slightly more dangerous on the right until Grealish drifted to the left. I thought Cash overall had a really good game. Nothing to complain about, really. Very, very unlucky not to get the assist for Watkins. I was certain he was going to get brought down as well when he burst through on the right-hand side with that left centre-back for West Brom just pulling out of the tackle at the last second. I was certain he was going over there. Really good. And worth noting as well, on the other side, Target, I thought, had an excellent game today. Wasn't at his best against Burnley. But today, I thought he was one of the standout performers, particularly in the first half when they had 11 men. He was cutting out passes left, right and centre and really helping pin them high up into their own half.
Yep. Totally agree. Target had a very good game. I think he's that bit more solid this season, I think. But that is quite exciting when you look at the Cash Traore relationship down the right could potentially be, it's not going to be as good as, because Jack Grealish is certainly our best player, but almost it would take that weight from the left-hand side, and it's also, it'd be an extra outlet for us and an important outlet for us between Cash and Traore as opposed to Target and Grealish. Just before we get to the final bit, anyone who hasn't seen the game, just quickly go for the goals. First goal, Amaral Ghazi, 4th minute. Traore drifted from the right-hand side onto his left. He swung a cross in from about 30 yards out, about 10 yards in from the touchline on the right-hand side, left-footed to the back stick. Good finish by El Ghazi. It's right foot, kind of outside of the right foot, coming in to get past Sam Johnston. NXG of 0.66 for that goal. In all fairness, it was the assist made that. It was a really, really good ball in. The second goal, which was Traore, lovely finish. We broke away from the edge of our box. Grealish run all the way through the middle. He's laid it out. Grealish has gone from the left to the middle. He's laid it out to Traore, who's come onto his left, and he has passed it. It is a perfect pass into the bottom corner. Sam Johnston's bottom right-hand corner. A really, really good finish. NXG of 0.1 there. And then the final goal, which was Anwar El Ghazi. Penalty, he put it straight down the middle after Grealish had come in to just to the left of the D on the edge of the box, come inside. Some nice touches taken down by Shemi Ajay. He got past a couple of players. Really, really good. It was, vintage Grealish getting into the box. Clear penalty, dispatched by El Ghazi. I think just before the end, was it? El Ghazi came in from the left, beat a couple of men, nice step overs and drag backs on his right. Fairly central, the effort was, unfortunately. It was a good save by Johnston. Good effort, 0.12 XG that one. El Ghazi, was kind of expecting to get a hat-trick there, I think, after he'd done all the hard work, in all fairness. Ian, who would you give your man of the match to tonight?
I'm going to go with who scored and give it to Traore. I thought it was his best game in a Villa shirt so far. And we were saying, weren't we, about patience. And it might just be the spark that he needed with the Trezeguet injury to his hamstring, just a run of games in the team to develop his confidence, to build those partnerships with the players around him. I thought there was some great stuff down the right, interchanging between himself and Cash. There was one move in the first half where it was like one touch passing between, I think, three players. And then it released Cash on the right-hand side, and we were unlucky. Cash's cross went straight into Sam Johnson's arms, but it was just fast, quick football, and that's what you need to progress against sort of teams that play a sort of defensive line like Albion were today. But yeah, all-round game from Traore tonight was brilliant, and he topped it up with that finish. Like you say, that finish was something else. He didn't even give Sam Johnson time to set himself, and by the time it's in the back of the net, Sam Johnson's just looking at his post like thinking, what the hell's just happened there? How has he just done that? But yeah, it was a great performance by him, and there's a few. El Ghazi, Grealish again, having a good game, he always does. The defence was solid. House and Tyrone Mings did really well, built on their partnership from the Burnley game. They didn't have much to do because we were just dominating possession from them, and they only had Carlin Grant up front that didn't really sort of harry them or sort of try and chase them down at all. But yeah, really comfortable performance, but I've got to give it to that man Traore, and let's hope he can build on that and get a few more goals and assists in the next couple of games over the Christmas period.
Jack, who would you say in your man of the match?
I think I'd probably have to reiterate everything that Ian has just said. Yeah, to come off a couple of not stellar performances, I think he's put himself about a bit. And yeah, linked up quite well with Cash, although obviously mentioned glad to see a few more glad to see him be a bit more direct. But yeah, I like his little quick one passes and yeah, moving around. But yeah, I thought he's a massive improvement and he looked quite dangerous, which was nice to see, and hopefully something they can take forward to next few games.
Yep. Yeah, totally agree with you, in all fairness. And Joe, finally, would you be saying your man of the matches?
I think I'll comment on the whole team first. The back line, all really good. Nothing to mention there at all. House has made it really, really good. Done really well covering Konsa. Expect Konsa to come back in, but House has shown he's definitely capable of filling in when needed. Midfield-wise, all of it looked very solid. McGinn looked all over the park again, running the show, really. Linking well, just really needs to find his shooting boots for us. It's not quite matching his Scott as well. Grealish, given Budweiser man of the match, I thought he played well. I think he linked play well. The burst in run for the penalty in particular was excellent, as was the assist for Traore. I still feel he is better on the left. I feel we're a better team. And Barclays in the centre. But I'll move on to our guys next. I felt he actually had a really good game. And again, just like House, he's shown that he's capable of being a backup and he actually has something to offer, which I think the jury was very much out in the summer about whether he had anything to offer us at all. And I think a lot of people felt that it was time for him to go.
Yeah.
He's really stepped up and I think he's proved a lot of the, not the doubters per se, but certainly the people that were going after him and giving him abuse or whatever, that was bang out of order to begin with. But it have a lot of quality at times and can benefit us. Watkins, for me, was a little bit isolated, very unlucky with the goal. I think he could really do with one soon. It's a couple of games now. I think he's still playing really well, just for him personally. I think it'd be nice. Man of the match, though, Bertrand Traore did fantastically well. That cross for El Ghazi really showed that bit of quality. And frankly, that was lacking from us for quite a large portion. It was really him pushing forward. That cross was excellent. His finish for his goal was play with Cash was excellent throughout. So yeah, man of the match for me.
Yep, full house. I'll give it Traore. Agree with everything that the three of you have said. In all fairness, it was certainly his best game for us. At the end of the day, as well, you know, he's obviously a good technician and he shows a lot of good touches in games. He tends to, which I don't think he did today. You know, he'd do one good thing and then he'd go and do one bad thing. Didn't seem to do that today. Might just be because of how dominant we were. And as well, you know, you're looking at the output, he's got a goal, he's got an assist. You know, you can't really ask for much more than that from your wing. Funny, so looking at earlier in terms of obviously, I think midweek the Premier League voted, or the Premier League clubs voted against the 5-sub rule. Which obviously Klopp would have been pissed off about, and going off tonight. I don't know if Dean Smith has recommended that we don't bother with subs and we just say fuck it and just stick with 11 players. I don't know. We mentioned about Conor Hourihan, kind of a lot of people were still saying if Barkley's not playing, we've got to play didn't we the other day about his kind of stats, and we said in terms of tackles, interceptions and passes, which is what you want to be looking at for your centre midfielder, whether they're playing as a 6 or an 8 or as a 10. Just quickly go through them. Tackles per game. This is based off off last season. Tackles per game. Douglas Luiz 1.27. Marvellous Nakamba 1.9. Conor Hourihan 0.6. Interceptions per game. Douglas Luiz 1 per game. Marvellous Nakamba 1.3. Conor Hourihan 0.3. I'm looking at the, you know, whether it be 6, 8, or 10. So I've included Grealish and Barkley in this one. Grealish, 38. Douglas Luiz, 33.6. Barkley, 29.4. Rather, I'll change my accent there slightly. Marvis Nakamba, 27. And Harahan, 22.7. So he's kind of, he's way off in terms of his stats there. And that's probably why he is not making the team. Right. We're going to move on to something that we call spinning the Martin O'Neill. Scored 3 goals, and there is 3 of you playing. You're each going to have a spin of the wheel. I mean, I'm going to click the button for you, so it's not going to be as exciting as actually spinning a wheel. You get a subject. You get a subject, and then all 3 of you will get 1 question to answer it, and we'll see who comes out on top. So, Ian, you'll have this.
But you get Michael McIntyre to come in and spin it for us.
Well, that's the plan. I think, you know, eventually when we become massive, build a wheel somewhere and stand on it, and we'll just spin it, and, you know, it's going to be really fun. you know, the tough thing is that I've got 2 people who are, you know, up north, in bloody Leeds and Barnsley. So that they'd have to make a trip down just so they can spin the wheel themselves. Ian, when you, if you tell me when to spin, I will click my mouse as best as I can, and I'll spin the wheel for you and see what you get first of all.
Lovely stuff. You're putting the pressure on me by letting me go.
Let's see what we get. So subjects are high or low. I played for both. Where are they from? Squad numbers, stat attack, and guess who? And you have got guess who? So you'll be first to answer guess who, and then the other two will get one. So I've picked out a random player who's played for Aston Villa. I'll just give a couple of stats for you and a couple of facts about them. So this player played for Aston Villa between 2008, and they played 64 times. I've played international football for Scotland, and they're currently playing in the Championship. Any ideas who?
Joined us in 2008.
Well, he played for us.
I'm going to go Barry Bannon.
Barry Bannon is the correct answer. Well done.
50% chance to get it right, but yeah, I'm happy with that.
So you two, you've got a question as well off Ian's subject. So Jack, I'm going to come to you first. This player grew up in Stevenage, started his football career with Stevenage, but was released in 2016. He then was picked up by Biggleswade Town, and we ended up signing him, and he still plays for the club. Who is it?
I am going to be useless at this. Everybody's ears probably going to know this, and yet I'm going to be the one that's not. Picked up from us when, sorry?
So we signed him from Biggleswade Town in 2015. So he signed in 2015 for Biggleswade Town on a free transfer after being released by Stevenage. He was scouted in a friendly where he was playing for Biggleswade Town under 18s, and Aston Villa signed him to get him into our youth team December 2015. Still plays for the club.
I'm going to end my debut in misery, so I have no idea.
Can I answer?
I think I know this one.
Can I get a bonus point?
You can get a bonus point. I'm gonna pass it to Joe though, as you've already answered.
Is it Keenan Davis?
Oh, it is. Well done,
Jack.
Keenan Davis. And Joe, your random person. He's an ex Lazio and Chelsea player. He's also played international football for Italy, and He managed us in 2016. Who is it?
Di Matteo.
It is, yes. Di Matteo. Well done.
Really feel I got short.
So after... I've just picked... Yeah, it probably was the toughest one. It's just picked totally picked randomly. So after Ian's spin, where we got who are they? Jack on zero, Ian on one, Joe's got two. We've got the bonus point there. As you're in front, Joe, you tell me when...
Give it a spin, Griff.
And I'll... Right, there we go. Mononeal wheel is spinning. Oh, and you've got... Oh, it was close between Where Are They From and Squad Numbers. So you've landed on Squad Numbers. So you'll be the first to answer. And what I've done is I've randomly picked a season for us, and I'm going to either name a player or a squad number, and you've got to tell me who it is. The season I picked is the 2012-13 season.
This is
going to
be fun.
This will be fun. And who wore the number six shirt for us in this season?
Number six. I'm trying to think who was even there. Bakuna.
It was not Bakuna. Anyone else, any ideas for a bonus point?
I've got a feeling it's one of the defenders.
Kieran Clark.
Jack. It is Kieran Clark. Well done, Jack. You got yourself a bonus point.
Did I help you at all, Jack?
Good effort.
My first thought was Kareem El Amadi, and I thought he got number eight, I think. And then I just...
Yeah.
It's a period of time I think I've just got deleted from my memory.
I think most of us did, to be honest. That's that season. Yeah. It was not one of the best.
We've probably eclipsed from 2010 to this current season, that, like, apart from the playoff season obviously going up, in terms of your memories, because you just got no sort of good memories.
Yeah, there was a few seasons, wasn't there, towards the end under Lambert, which were pretty bad. Ian, right. What number did Charles and Zogbia wear that season?
It's in the 20s. No. Oh, no, did it? Oh, I can't remember if he had Ashley Young's shirt.
Did we get, like, a little countdown timer?
Should do it, isn't it? Do, 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 do. Come on, we ain't going to
know. I've got a feeling there's a 2 in there, but I don't know if it's a 22 or 12. I'm going to go 22.
It is not. Any ideas, you guys?
25.
I was going to say 28.
It's not. He wore number 10 that season.
Did he? Imagine getting a 10 shirt.
Punching.
So, yeah, he was. He was. That was the decline when we started giving people big contracts and good numbers. Right. So, Jack, who wore the number 15 shirt that season?
What season was that, sorry?
2012-13.
Oh.
I know it.
Ashley Westwood.
It was Ashley Westwood. Well done. So that round, which was Joe's spin, Jack got 2. Ian and Joe got 0. So you got to book your ideas up for the last one.
That was a bad spin, that.
Bad spin. Okay, last spin, Jack. Let me know when.
No.
I mean, it literally makes no difference. But, you know.
There isn't even a wheel on your screen, is there, Chris? You're just making it up as you go along.
I'm just clicking things and just saying.
Just wants us to feel involved.
Right, we've got higher or lower. Okay, so the way this one works is I give a starting number, which is based on the number of goals that were scored by a player in a season. I will tell you how many it was. And then each of you will get a player. So obviously I'll start with Jack. It was his spin. A player and a season. And you've got to tell me whether the number of goals they scored in that season was higher or lower than the one before. So obviously the first one is going to be higher or lower than the starting one. The second one is going to be higher or lower than the first one. And then the third one is going to be higher or lower than the second one, if you understand, get my drift. You should get it. It's fairly straightforward. So the starting number is the number of goals scored by Wesley in the 2019-2020 season, which was 5. And the first one for you, Jack, is Juan Pablo Angel in the 01-02 season, which was his first full season. Was it higher or lower than the 5 goals scored by Wesley in the 19-20 season?
Logic would dictate higher, but I think he had a bit of a slow start. I'm probably going to get it wrong, but I'm going to go lower.
Juan Pablo Angel in the 01-02 season scored 12 goals, so it was higher. So no points for you.
We need one of those big X Factor like buzzers, don't we?
Yeah. See, it'll all come. We'll have a big wheel, all these buzzers, everything.
It's nice reminiscing on this, though, because obviously then, yeah, it was the season before when Coventry got relegated when he scored his first, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
because well, he had a older than me.
He had a slow start, then he got one in his first season, but I think he was signing in January.
And then obviously January.
His second season, his first full season, he did all right.
Does that mean Alan Samata outscored Angel in his first half season?
Yeah.
Jesus.
For you, Joe, Gabriel Bonlahor in 06-07 season, which was his first full season,
mm-hmm.
were the number of goals he scored higher or lower than the 12 scored by Juan Pablo Angel in the 01-02 season?
Considering he only broke double figures twice in his career, I'm going lower.
Gabriel Bonlahor in the 06-07 season scored 9 goals, so well done. It was lower.
Thank you.
And finally, Ian. Probably it's certainly the toughest one. Peter with 81-82 season. This is league goals only. Were the number of goals he scored higher or lower than the goal scored by Gabby in 06-07, which was 9?
Oh, God. I feel like this is like a double bluff because everybody knows how that famous goal from Peter with, and you'd expect it to be higher, but maybe it was. There was a lot of goals from other players like Tony Morley in that season. Not that I was alive to see it, but I've watched a lot of videos.
You're aging well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're looking less crackhead tonight.
I'm gonna go lower just because I think it's a double bluff. Sort of, I think it's like an obvious one where you would have gone higher, but I'm probably wrong, aren't I?
So Peter With in the 81-82 season scored 10 league goals. So it was higher by 1. So after 3 spins of the Martin O'Neill wheel, the subjects we had were guess who? Squad numbers, I'm trying to read upside down so it's not working well, and higher or lower. Ian, you scored 1.
Solid start.
Solid
that.
Start. Jack got 2. And this week's winner with 3 was Joe Davidson.
Yeah, lovely stuff. Do I get a little prize for it, like a little plaque? Get it engraved.
Yeah, Christmas present for your win, Joe.
Maybe at the end of you can get a plaque at the end of the season. We'll, each week we'll do this. So if you miss a week, then you know you're forfeiting a chance of getting some points on the board. So Joe takes his first win, so his first 3 points, and then we'll move on next week. Same subjects, unless I'm feeling fruity and I might add some more in there. But those are the
Christmas
ones.
Special.
Yeah, might be maybe some special ones. You know, Christmas names, formations like Christmas tree. So there we go. So the first week of spinning the Martin O'Neill wheel, Joe Davidson took the win because Jack and Ian took risks, thinking there was double bluffs where they went low. They went lower when they should have gone higher. So there we go. Right, massive thank you as always to Ian and Joe. Also, massive thank you to Jack on making his debut. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure as always.
Aston Villa
doing one on the back of a good victory.
Yeah, it's been. We've had a few this season where we've had some good ones after good wins. You know, obviously Leicester, Arsenal, Liverpool. But recently it's been a bit mixed, hasn't it? So it's nice to get a good win as well and shut up those baggies. We need to add that music in as well, don't we? Fuck the Albion over and over again at the end. Massive thanks, guys. Aston Villa play the 28th of December against Crystal Palace at home, which is live on the BBC. So that's going to be a good one to watch. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Make sure you subscribe to us on YouTube. Hit the notifications button so you get a notification every time we post a video so you can see how everyone gets on the Martin O'Neill wheel if you don't care about how we've got on during the game or want to listen to our thoughts on the game. Also, you can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all that jazz. Massive thanks to everyone's support. We're on Twitter at Villa Together, also on Instagram at Villa Together, and obviously we're on YouTube, search Villa Together. Massive thanks to everyone for listening. We've been Villa Together, and we'll speak to you soon. Everyone listening, have a wonderful Christmas, as we will speak to you after Christmas next time. Thank you very much.